Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 9, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home, Text Number 4. Satam vivaksantam matadvedam hari. Gyatvasya sarvasya charyam vastita. Kritanjalim Brahma Mayena Kambanu
Kritanjalim Brahma Mayena Kambanu
Paspersa Balam Kripaya Kapole
Paspersa Balam Kripaya Kapole.
Saha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tam Dhruva Maharaj. Vivaksantam. Wanting to offer prayers. Describing his qualities. Atat Vidam.
Not experienced at that.
Hari. The personality of Godhead. Yatva.
Having understood.
Asya of Dhruva
Maharaj,
Sarvasya
of everyone,
Cha
end,
Rede
in the heart,
Avastitaha
being situated,
Kritanjalim situated with folded hands.
Brahma Mayena,
just consistent with the words of the Vedic hymns.
Kambuna,
with his conch shell.
Pasparsa,
touched.
Balam,
the boy.
Kripaya,
out of causeless mercy.
Kapole,
on the forehead.
Translation.
Although Dhruva Maharaj was a small boy, he wanted to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in suitable language. But because he was inexperienced, he could not adjust himself immediately. The Supreme Personality of Godhead being situated in everyone's heart could understand Dhruva Maharaj's awkward position. Out of his causeless mercy, he touched his conch shell to the forehead of Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. Purport. Every devotee wants to chant the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Devotees are always interested in hearing about the Lord's transcendental qualities, and they're always eager to glorify these qualities. But sometimes they feel inconvenienced by humbleness, the personality of Godhead, being situated in everyone's heart, specifically gives a devotee intelligence to describe him. It is therefore understood that when a devotee writes or speaks about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his words are dictated by the Lord from within. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter. To those who constantly engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord from within dictates what to do next in order to serve him. When Dhruva Maharaj felt hesitant, not knowing how to describe the Lord, for want of sufficient experience, the Lord, out of his causeless mercy, touched his conch shell to Dhruva Maharaj's forehead, and he was transcendentally inspired. This transcendental inspiration is called Brahma Maya, because when one is thus inspired, the sound he produces exactly corresponds to the sound vibration of the Vedas. This is not the ordinary sound vibration of this material world. Therefore, the sound vibration of the Hare Krishna mantra, although presented in the ordinary alphabet, should not be taken as mundane or material. Sometimes Prabhupada is speaking about the songs of the great Vaishnava acharyas such as Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. And he says these two personalities were pure devotees of the Lord. And because they were pure devotees of the Lord, therefore the songs that they wrote are no different from scripture. Whatever they say, whatever the pure devotee says, is as good as the word of scripture. There is no difference. We find a description about the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, and how the book Bhagavat, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, is known as such because these are the words from Bhagavan. So that which is contains the information which has been revealed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the book Bhagavat. And that very same knowledge may also be given by a devotee who is totally dedicated to the Bhagavat and then becomes the person Bhagavat. So here we see that Dhruva Maharaj is such a Bhagavat. He is a Bhagavat Bhakta, and therefore he is able to personally speak pure and transcendental knowledge. Such speech cannot really take place unless one is receiving the mercy of the Lord. So Dhruva Maharaj, although he desired to glorify the Lord, could not do so until the Lord bestowed his mercy upon him, until the Lord touched his forehead with a conch shell. That is a particular way that the Lord bestowed his mercy upon him, by touching him with the conch shell. We see how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed mercy upon the residents of South India by traveling from village to village and embracing people. And just by embracing people, they would become like ecstatic in love of God. Others were swept up in the dancing of the kirtan by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they also were just swept up in symptoms of love of God. And it's said that these personalities themselves became so potent that they could also transform people completely and make them totally ecstatic in love of God. So in this way, the Lord empowers his devotees with bhakti shakti, it is stated. Unless one is empowered with bhakti shakti, one cannot actually preach Krishna consciousness. Krishna shakti bine nahatara pravartam. Without the empowerment of Krishna, one cannot glorify Krishna. That is not possible. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that empowerment with bhakti shakti includes the chit potency and the ananda potency, or the knowledge potency and the happiness, the pleasure potency of the Lord. So if one becomes empowered by the Supreme Lord, one experiences great transcendental bliss, and one is also experiencing transcendental knowledge. Ignorance becomes destroyed, and one actually understands the nature of the Supreme Lord, the nature of devotional service, and so on. And in this way, one can understand clearly what is the goal of life. Vasudeva Paragati. That the goal of life is Vasudev, or as sometimes is stated, Prema Pumarta Mahan, that the aim of life is to develop love of God. Yes. So in this way, a devotee, because he knows the goal of life, he understands everything in its proper perspective. Because he can see how everything is relating to the goal of life. To go back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. So when one understands that going back to Godhead is the essence, then we can immediately understand what is valuable and what is not valuable. And this is the devotee's platform. So besides that, Dhruva Maharaj was given the ability to express himself very nicely in appropriate language. More important than that was that Dhruva Maharaj was able to ascertain what was the truth. and that he was now able to speak the absolute truth. This is the self-realized platform. We are all simply conditioned by the material energy, and therefore we have our own relative experience of the truth. But the pure devotee, he is situated in the absolute truth, and he understands Vadanti tat tattvam yat jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabjate. He understands the Brahman energy of the Lord, which is all-pervading, the spiritual energy, which is the basis of everything. And he understands, Brahmano pratistam, that this Brahman energy is resting on me, Krishna says. So he understands that the all-pervading spiritual Brahman energy is resting on Krishna. So Brahmano pratistaham is an important statement because it establishes that the personality of Godhead is superior than the energy, than the Brahman energy, and that he's separate from it. So this is very important to understand. So, therefore the devotee can clearly see reality. He can clearly see things as they are. And this is the most important quality of a devotee. That he can cut through illusion and just simply establish the absolute truth. And whether one is a great orator or whether one is not such a great public speaker, that doesn't matter. That really doesn't matter. The essence is that a person knows the truth and in a simple way can explain it. That is the real purpose of life. There are so many things going on in this world, and one can so easily become involved in so many things. One can get very, very busy, until there's absolutely no time left. Impossible. Very simple. But a devotee will withdraw. It is said like a tortoise will withdraw his limbs in the shield. Which means that the devotee will not engage his senses with the material energy unless it is in devotional service. That is the main objective of a devotee, to somehow or other be involved in devotional service with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then life changes, because from that time on, one cannot really become so deeply absorbed in enjoying the material energy anymore. Initially, we may try to enjoy the material energy and we may be very serious about it because it's all we have. But once we have Krishna, then, well, you know, we can still be attached to enjoying the material energy, but we do not fully believe in it anymore. So our faith has changed. Sara sapta vishwas kahe sudrida nischai Krishna bhakti kaila sarva karma krita hai. But a pure devotee is appreciating that from serving Krishna, all the benefits in this life will come. And that is actually the conclusion of transcendental knowledge. And when that conclusion is clearly established, then we're dealing with the greatest saintly person. Still this idea that a saintly person can be recognized by how much he is disinterested in the material energy may not always be the criterion. Because under the surface, he can still be attached to the material energy, although externally, he may be a great renunciant. Because renunciation cannot be the focus. Renunciation is the consequence of Krishna consciousness. When we are attached to Krishna, then automatically we become renounced. And that is real renunciation. All any other type of renunciation is not permanent, is temporary. Because one has actually not established the relationship with the Supreme Lord where we will find full satisfaction. So at this point in the story, we see that Dhruva Maharaj has understood the conclusion of the Vedas, it is there. He has perfectly understood the Vedic conclusion. And this is very important, that one understands the Vedic conclusion. Being Vaishnavas in a disciplic succession, one can hear this very quickly from his bona fide spiritual master. Sarvas chaham ridhi sannivisto matasmitir gyanam bhavanamscha vedaischa sarvir aham eva vidyo vedanta vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. That Lord Krishna is situated within the heart, and remembrance and forgetfulness come from him. And one who is remembering, he knows that Lord Krishna is the purpose of all the Vedas. So this is the essence, that we understand that all the Vedas are simply meant to bring one to this point of surrendering one's life in devotional service to Krishna. This is for us who are connected to this Sankirtan movement, not the most revolutionary news. It's not that we have never heard these points, but still it is inspiring. It is inspiring to meditate on these points. Yeah. It is by meditating that devotional service to Krishna is the goal of life, we can actually increase our commitment. So it is important that we somehow or other establish our commitment in devotional service, and it's not so easy. Therefore, it is favorable if we can adopt the culture of Krishna consciousness or Krishna conscious practices. For example, if we put tilak, right? Wearing tilak is identifying our body as a temple. It is identifying ourselves as the servant of the Supreme Lord. And within it, we are treating the Supreme Lord with great respect. So there are many, many practices in Vaishnava culture and behavior which are all aiming at the same thing, to respect the Supreme Lord. It's just like when we take prasadam and we're not in the temple, you think, well, while eating, want something else, take it with the left hand, rather than washing hand and mouth. I think, well, you know, we cannot be so fanatic. And that may be true. But the reason for the rules and regulations are that we simply accept these pots are Krishna's pots, because we are cooking for Krishna. We're not cooking for ourselves. We are first cooking for Krishna. And therefore the pots are Krishna's pots, and therefore must be treated with the greatest respect. And therefore hands and mouth must always be clean when one is in any way in contact with these pots. So taking with the left hand while eating is really not actually acceptable. But when one's outside the temple and think, well, you know, outside the temple, it cannot be so fanatic. Now, but this is not just a matter of fanaticism or no fanaticism or liberalism, but rather this is a matter of, is an opportunity of cultivating a respectful attitude towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there are so many little things like this, so many rules of how one should conduct himself. The first thing we do when we wake up in the morning is offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord. I mean, sometimes I just forget. Yes, but this is, and the last thing we do at night is also offering obeisances. These things are again reinforcing us in our mood of surrender to the Supreme Lord. So all these small customs that we are learning, all these help us to make the big step of surrender, to make the big commitment to the four regulative principles and to chanting 16 rounds. Therefore, one must be very careful about these smaller things. Just like we used to go out on Sankirtan, on the book distribution, and then one was supposed, then if one didn't wear tilak, then it was said you could put it with water. Yeah. Of course, many people didn't do that. Yeah. Water tilak. But it is a fact that if we chant the mantra, Om Keshavaya Namaha, there's protection. And one can certainly wear tilak in all the other places. Even if at work one cannot wear tilak on his forehead, that may be or may not be, that depends. But one can wear the tilak on all the other 11 places on the body all the time. So these are just examples. And if we do so, it will help. It will help us in our identification as devotees of the Supreme Lord. And ultimately we get strength from there. From all these little things, we get strength. And therefore, we require, in order to come to this point, we have a system of prescribed behavior, which is favorable for cultivating the remembrance of Krishna and cultivating surrender to Krishna. So we need somehow or other always follow these prescribed rules and regulations and learn them more and more so that we can become purified. In this way, we can build up our Krishna consciousness. And in this way, it's not such an impossible step. Of course, the foremost of all activities is the chanting of the holy name. But even to do that, we require some support. We require some favorable atmosphere, otherwise it becomes very difficult. Like yesterday, I traveled all day and it was difficult because I left at 5 in the morning, so I had to chant rounds on airports and planes, and it's just difficult because there's so many distractions, so many people who are materialistic. One cannot freely chant. It's not the same noise from the plane. So it's not the same quality as chanting in the temple. So we are chanting in a favorable place so that we can get that firm connection with Krishna. Ultimately, we are meant to become like Dhruva Maharaj, empowered devotees. Devotees who have pleased Krishna, and then by the mercy of Krishna, are getting more opportunity to glorify Krishna. We see that in the spiritual world, the living entities have all unlimited power because they're glorifying Krishna. So the more we will glorify Krishna, the more power we will get. And the less we glorify Krishna, the more power we will lose with time. Sometimes it appears that an atheist becomes very powerful. Why does Bill Gates have so much money? Why not Kadambakananda Swami? Yeah? Yeah? Why don't I get all that money? Right? I mean, I could spend it a lot better than Bill Gates, without a doubt. But what can we do? Somehow or other, Bill Gates has it. Maybe Krishna's protecting me, because maybe it wouldn't be good for me to have so much. Maybe. Or maybe Krishna has another plan. Whatever it may be Krishna at this point is not yet sending someone's opulence, but maybe he will in the future. We don't know Krishna's plan. But anyway, we are just accepting Krishna's mercy and serve Krishna in the hope that he will be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, then Krishna from within will reveal to the devotee. He will reveal what to do and what not to do. Krishna will give indications and one will understand. That is the nature of devotional service. So this is not an intellectual process or a mechanical process. This is exclusively depending on how much Krishna is satisfied by our endeavors. And immediately we become situated in transcendental knowledge. So we are being transformed through this movement and become the surrendered servants of our spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada used to say, he said that when I was young, my father, I wanted a toy gun, and his father gave him the gun. But when his father had bought him the gun, then Prabhupada wanted another one. And he said he had to have one for each hand. Yeah, so he wanted to have two guns. And he was very determined about getting these two guns, and then eventually his father gave it to him. Although first he refused. He said, I gave you one. But he wanted two, and he got two. So he had two guns, and Prabhupada said, yes, I got it because I was very stubborn. He said, now Krishna has sent me so many American fathers and mothers. So meaning to say that yes, you all have to serve me and you have to supply whatever I want. Yeah? Just as my father used to say. Yes, that's actually what Prabhupada meant to say. So it is a fact that whatever the spiritual master wants, we must supply it at once, immediately. We must be ready to run here and there and do this and that to somehow or other spread Krishna consciousness. Of course, the spiritual master has the important mission to engage all that service in the glorification of Krishna, not just in his own comfort. It is said that the disciple should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant and supply whatever he requires for his personal needs. But that is the duty of the disciple. But it is the duty of the spiritual master to, as much as possible, use everything for the glorification of Krishna. That is his service. In this way, both have their responsibility. And if both are acting in this way, then everything becomes very, very favorable. Then the disciple just works very hard to do whatever he can for the spiritual master. And the spiritual master will use all that energy that he gets from the assistance of his disciples for the glorification of Krishna. And he directs all that energy towards the glorification of Krishna. And in this way, we can serve Krishna. We can serve Krishna under the direction of a superior authority. And without that, there's no question of serving Krishna.
not very significantly. One can serve Krishna a little bit, still it comes through the mercy of the devotees, but one may be not very committed to serving the devotees, but only to serve Krishna. Then one cannot make much advancement. This is the Kanista Adhikari platform, who only recognizes the deity, but who does not recognize the devotees. One must actually recognize the devotees and serve the devotees. Especially the senior Vaishnavas. We serve all devotees, but especially the spiritual master. We serve him with all our energy. Then, if we try this, of course, we'll have our weak moments, because we are not so strong. We have our false ego. We have our material attachments. We have our pride. We have so many obstacles on our path in serving our spiritual master. But anyhow, somehow or other, in spite of all these obstacles, we make the endeavor. And the result is that Krishna will be pleased, and by his mercy, we can become more advanced. So Dhruva Maharaj had taken full shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, Narada Muni. And the result was that Dhruva Maharaj had very diligently, strictly followed all the directions of his spiritual master, exactly as he had heard it. And the result was tremendous, that Dhruva Maharaj, although he did not really have any prior qualification, became such an extraordinary devotee of the Lord. That is to be understood, that simply by very carefully following the instruction of our spiritual master, whatever it may be, everything that is auspicious will be attained. And this is the process, the simple process of Krishna consciousness. It is through that means that we will ultimately develop the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord by pleasing our spiritual master.
Okay, are there any questions, any comments? Okay, go on.
Yesterday, he was saying that Govinda Manipurja, I was wondering, is there any hierarchy in his primary names, Krishna, Gopal, Govinda?
Govinda. Well, of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we do find some reference that the three principal deities were established in Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath, and that Madan Mohan is Krishna in his feature of attracting the conditioned souls, that Govinda is the one who gives pleasure to the senses, and that he is the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. So it is said that, and then that Gopinath is the Lord of the Gopis. So there is some difference stated there in the nature of these deities, and obviously they are non-different from their names. So yes, there is some difference in these names, certain hierarchy in how much Krishna reveals himself. One cannot say that Govinda is lower than Gopinath, because Govinda is Gopinath. There's no difference between Govinda and Gopinath. But at the same time, in his mood of Gopinath, he reveals something about his pastimes with the gopis that he does not reveal anywhere else. And there where this relationship with the gopis is being disclosed, we can see that within
that relationship, the greatest pure devotion, is displayed. And therefore, we are naturally attracted to the devotion of the gopis. When we see such devotion, or even hear about it, or slightly even hear some hints about it, we immediately feel wretched and impure, and so on. So, hearing about Gopinath is a very powerful thing for a devotee. Although we may not directly be qualified to understand the dealings of Krishna and the gopis, but at least we can appreciate that they have unconditional service attitude. And if we just meditate on that, on the unconditional service attitude, and take that from the gopis, then we are also attaining that, and then we'll also attain the gopis. So by unconditional service attitude, one can actually attain the understanding about the platform of the gopis. So there is some hope. Although we're dealing always with the same person, but he manifests himself a little different.
How is that the name Govinda refers to the speaker of our people? Because Govinda is usually compared to Krishna in Vrindavan.
Yeah, that is a good point, and still, Srila Prabhupada mentioned this point that Govinda was the speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. I guess it is that Govinda, who left Vrindavan, who speaks the Bhagavad Gita. I can also not make a logical explanation. I can only say Prabhupada said.
Yeah. And there is a statement in the Gita that the living symptoms represented by consciousness and conviction are the manifestations of the subtle body, mind, ego and intelligence. So I was wondering, are the intelligence possible and possible personalities since they produce consciousness, or are they?
Well, it is stated that, of course, the living symptoms are truly the symptoms of the soul. But when the living entity becomes conditioned, then the living symptoms begin to manifest through the material, subtle body, mind, false ego, and intelligence. And then the intelligence begins to, which in itself is just one of the energies of the Supreme Lord, begins to take on the particular flavor of the one who is using it. Just as a bicycle. If we ride a bicycle, everyone has his own style. Everyone is pedaling along on the bicycle, but in a different way. Everyone has his own little little way of driving a bicycle. Some will push the pedals down, some others will push the pedals forward. Some are a little intense on the brakes, and so on. So the bicycle begins to take on the character of the person who's riding on it. Right? It's like an aggressive driving style. The person has it. A car also. A car takes on the nature of the person who's in it. So in this way, the intelligence also takes on the characteristics according to the particular state of mind that a person has. It is interesting that the intelligence is higher than the mind, but that still the condition of the mind is dictating the particular nature of the intelligence. As the mind is influenced, the intelligence begins to, the conditioned intelligence is discerned of the mind. And so, in this way, intelligence takes on individuality, and although in itself it is simply one of the separated energies of the Lord, but just like a bicycle takes on personality or anything that is used, just like everyone has his own way to move the incense in circles. Let's see how Vasudev has a particular style, the stiff wrists style, whereas this other pujaris, they are more like moving the wrists, right? But his wrist won't budge an inch. So in this way, everyone has his particular nature. The incense itself doesn't have a character. In the way it waves, but apparently it has. So it appears only that this intelligence has an individual nature. Anybody else?
Everyone goes back to God at steps from that point. Then one passes through different shells throughout the universe. I was reading
through the different shells of the universe, you said.
Yeah. I was reading that in every shell there's goddesses who are tempting the one to go back. So what about if a woman goes back? There's all the description about man being tempted.
Yeah. First of all, in going back to Godhead to travel through all these layers, I think that it's not necessarily so. I think it's not like such a hard, fast rule that one will go through that. I think that such a journey would be there if one approaches the absolute truth through a particular, especially through a process of strict sadhana. So the strict sadhaka may go through these kind of things. But one who has already attained the mercy of the Lord, it can happen in a much different way. So because our movement especially is not so much based on the great performance of sadhana, but rather we are attempting to perform sadhana as nice as we can, which is not so impressive. And then there is the added mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, I think it would be really it's questionable what exactly will transpire as we go on the way back to God, and whether all these temptations are required. Yeah. Obviously, if the men will be tested, the women will also be tested. Right? They will be tested. Yeah. There will be some where the men may be tested by celestial men, the ladies may be tested also by celestial male forms, whatever may be. It is certain that we will be tested, but it's not so certain that we will be tested throughout the 10 layers all the way back to Godhead. And then one comes to the trident of Vaikuntha, which blocks the direction if there is some impurity and so on. I don't think that this is also relevant for the devotees, because I think the devotees are getting the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. I think Elroy was first.
Yes. Can you give the definition about a senior devotee?
A senior devotee. There are different levels of seniority. Anybody who is longer in Krishna consciousness than we are is already senior. Anybody who is taking some special responsibility in devotional service, even if he's junior to us in time, is also senior. So seniority can be established on time in devotional service and in surrender in service attitude. Now, when I spoke in the lecture about us taking shelter and guidance of senior devotees, then we are specifically talking, we'll be respectful to all devotees who are even a little senior to us. Give them some special respect. But especially those who are very experienced, right, we'll take shelter of them. And ultimately, then there's a spiritual master. He is absolute. Whatever he says, we'll take absolute. Then there are others, they're very experienced. We may not take everything they say as absolute, but still, whatever they say, it weighs heavy. Yeah. If we want to do something and some senior devotee comes, who we don't exactly take as an absolute representative of Krishna, but he may be very senior. He may have been around for 20, 30 years. And he says, no, you shouldn't do that. Well, then it's difficult to say, well, you know, who is he? Oh, he's not my authority. I don't mean, you know, what is this? You know, why does he mind his own business? You can't take that attitude. You have to say, well, here's a senior Vaishnava who is expressing that I should not do. Maybe I should not do it. Or maybe I should at least wait and check with other senior Vaishnavas, with more, with those who are more senior than he is, right? And more senior, then I'll take, confirm it. Right? But under the circumstances, I cannot just ignore what they said. It may happen that a senior devotee will stress something too much, and that then someone else who is more senior will say, well, it is nice, but in your case, it is not really so necessary to apply this. And although, in general, there is such a recommendation, in your case, maybe it's not the right moment to do this, or so a more senior devotee who either is more senior in experience or more senior in service, in surrender. Now, one gets positions in devotional service. These positions are given by the Vaishnavas. So as the Vaishnavas give different kinds of position to a different person, he gets also another status. Yeah? Just by the sannyasi, they say, is the spiritual master of all the ashrams. So therefore you should not just give sannyas to anyone. Because once you give him the danda, then he is the spiritual master of all the ashrams. That's no joke, huh? So you have to be careful. If you give the danda to the wrong person, then he'll walk around with his danda and he'll just like say, I am the sannyasi, and you have to do what I say. And it may not always be. He may not always instruct with all wisdom that is required, because spiritual instructions have to be given with purity, with dedication to the standards that Krishna established, and also in such a way that the person to whom they are given can realistically surrender to them and realistically follow them. If instructions are given which are so high that one cannot follow anymore, then what to do? So therefore the instructor must be a person who has perfect spiritual knowledge, but who also has enough insight to see where a person is in spiritual life, so that he can connect someone to the process. But therefore we need a spiritual master. Sooner or later we have to make up our mind and we have to get serious about spiritual life and say, okay, I'll become the surrendered soul of my spiritual master, I'll just do whatever he desires. And that is the main thing. And there will be other senior devotees. So, but the one who is truly senior must get some recognition of the Vaishnavas. If somebody walks around all by himself, and he's been around and he said, I am so senior, I am so senior, but the Vaishnavas are not recognizing it. Something is not right there. Yeah. And he may be senior in years, but still the Vaishnavas are not giving him so much importance. Then there's something wrong. It can be that someone is very senior in years, but that he's not following so strictly. So then what to do? Is such a person a senior devotee or not? Yeah. So yes, he's a senior devotee in the sense that he has to be treated with all the respect of a senior devotee. But because he's not following so strictly, then his instructions can also not be taken in as being so absolute. Yeah. So this is a consideration. If one who is senior is following very strictly and very purely, his instructions begin to carry more and more weight. Like that. And when the recognition of the Vaishnavas is there, well, then it even gets more and more weight. Like that. Somebody disappeared. Okay. And somebody else appeared. So, yes.
There is a statement in Arivila that the Sandini portion of Krishna's internal potency was manifested there, the all the every form of Krishna.
I couldn't hear the last.
The Sandini portion of Krishna manifested the all the every form of Krishna.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So it is that Krishna is the first and then the concept in that
Yeah, of course, I mean, it is the way it's written, it's almost written like there's a progression in time. Right? But in reality, of course, there is no such thing as a beginning and that one of the two was there first, that Krishna was there first and his Sandini potency came later. Rather, Krishna and his Sandini potency are there simultaneous. And the Sandini potency is that which is the particular aspect of Krishna which sustains his form and his existence potency. Sandini means his existence potency. So the sentence is kind of bewildering because it looks like a progression in time. But how could there be a progression in time? Because Krishna is Aja. He never takes birth. There is no beginning. Never was there a time when I did not exist nor you. Krishna is eternal. So his Sandini is also eternal. And as such, but still Krishna's form rests on this Sandini potency.
So did Prabhupada make a grammatical mistake?
No, I don't know if it's a grammatical mistake. I don't think it's a grammatical mistake. It may be just the misleading nature of language. I think so. I don't even know if Prabhupada phrased these sentences, because many times in Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada, in the Bhagavad Gita, he wrote quite a strict manuscript. But like in some of the other translations, many times Prabhupada would indicate a point and then leave it up to the editor to make it into a sentence. So sometimes it's not even Prabhupada's sentence. Sometimes the sentences are the work of the editors. But I think that this is just the nature of language. It's very difficult to express the spiritual reality in material words. It is a fact. Because the spiritual reality is timeless. And how are we going to explain this, you know? I mean, whenever we speak, we always get caught up in progression of time. So I think this is just due to that problem more than anything else. Anybody else? Otherwise, we are going to end. Yeah. Okay. See you. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.